Well, it's the top of the hour, and with respect to everybody's time, we can get going. I'm Diane Kvossman. I'm a communications advisor with the ISO, and I just have a few housekeeping items before we get started with today's session. First, just a quick reminder that the ISO is recording today's session, and we will be posting the recording on our website under the file path Grid, Projects, and CETO. And if you have any questions about the ISO's use of personal information for this session or the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, you'll find the contact information on slide 2 of this presentation. And I'll just do a quick overview now of how we will be managing questions. When joining the webinar today, everyone was put into listen-only mode with their cameras disabled and their mics muted. Only our presenters will have a functional video.
Why did you try to go to that area?
Pardon? Oh, sorry, I thought somebody was speaking there. Don't hesitate to submit questions to the chat box as they occur to you. You can just click the Q&A button next to the raise hand icon. And if you see that someone else has asked a question similar to what you're planning to submit, you'll have the option of upvoting. And please do raise your virtual hand if you have a question. I will unmute your mic, at which time you can ask your question. Your name will appear on the screen, but your camera will remain turned off. If you're asking a live question, please always do state your first and last name and the organization you work for. If you've joined us via conference call and would like to ask a question at the end of the presentation, hit star or asterisk 9, and I'll see that you've raised your hand, and I'll unmute your microphone. You will receive a notification that you will also have to unmute your mic by hitting star 6. Again, a reminder to state your name and organization. And with respect to our stakeholder engagement framework, we rolled that out in January 2020. The framework sets out the ISO's principles-based approach to our formal engagement with stakeholders and the important role that it plays in how we deliver our mandate. And with that, I will turn things over to Ada Ringo, our Grid Planning and Operations Engineering Director. Ada.
Thank you, Diane. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the CETO Reaffirmation Study Assumptions session. As Diane pointed out, my name is Ada Raymond, and I'm the Director of Grid Planning and Operations Engineering at the ISO. As some of you may recall, that the need hearing for CETO transmission development was held in April last year, and the ISO proposed to carry out a reaffirmation analysis before directing the TFO to construct the facilities. This was proposed as an added check to make sure that we proceed with the construction as close to the need timing as possible. We also agreed to share the assumptions and key input parameters with the stakeholders and provide an opportunity for them to provide feedback and comments. The objective of today's session is to walk the participants through the key assumptions and parameters and obtain their feedback. My colleagues, Peter Huang, Manager System Planning, and Chad Ayers, Senior Markets Simulation Analyst, will present the details in this session. Dr. Jin Hao, Lead Engineer System Planning, will be helping in this session as well. Please note that we would only be discussing the key input parameters presented in this presentation and not talk about any other topics such as the need or alternatives considered for the need or routing and siting issues. At the end, we will also talk about the next steps and the timelines for the next steps. So I look forward to your participation and your feedback and comments on the session. And with this brief introduction, I'll hand it over to Peter Huang. Over to you, Peter.
Thank you very much, Ada. Good morning, everyone. As Ada mentioned in his opening speech, that this session today is for the ISO to present and share with you the key assumptions that we are planning to use to conduct the CETO reaffirmation study. As we indicated during the CETO hearing, that the study itself is here to provide an updated congestion forecast based on the latest information that's available to us and to confirm if CETO stage one construction should proceed. In addition to presenting the key assumptions, of course, we're also here seeking your feedback on these key assumptions. When I say key assumptions, these are the items that's outlined in the key assumptions section of this particular presentation in front of you right now, going from page 9 to page 15. Ideally, we can have your feedback today during the session. However, we do understand that you may want to carefully consider the information presented today. Therefore, we are also open to receive your written feedback. If you choose to provide your written feedback, please do send your material through email by the end of the week, as our objective is to share and post the final assumptions at the beginning of March to start the study. And again, as a gentle reminder, this session is about the key assumptions. Any other item or topics related to project need, alternative evaluation and selection, routing and siting of the transmission facilities, or any other topic are considered out of scope for today's discussion. For the email, if you choose to provide your written feedback, the email address to send your feedback is stakeholder.relations@aeso.ca. You can find the email address later on in the next step slide of the presentation as well. Can we go to the next slide, please? Thank you. Just a little bit of background here, of course. As you're aware, the CETO project is the construction of a new double circuit 240 kV line from Tinchebrae substation to Gates substation. The new line is needed to enable additional generation integration capability in the Central East and Southeast. An AUC hearing was held last year on the NET application, as well as the TFO's facility applications. And all three applications were approved by the AUC in August 2021. As part of ISO's NET application, we identify a milestone monitoring range. This milestone is based on the total amount of generation project in Central East and Southeast, meeting ISO's project inclusion criteria. The milestone upper limit was actually reached in the fall last year. With that, the ISO is planning to perform the reaffirmation study now using the most up-to-date information available to us to provide an updated forecast on congestion. If we can go to the next slide, it shows you the reaffirmation process flowchart that we presented during the hearings, during the hearing stage. The top diamond you see is where the ISO determined that the reaffirmation study is needed. As such, we have determined and shared with you some of the study assumptions through the presentation today. And we are currently in that second square box from the top in the middle flow section, holding the stakeholder session today and seeking your feedback on these study assumptions. Our goal is to determine the final assumptions with your input and provide and post these assumptions on our website to kickstart our reaffirmation study. Next slide, please. So here are the key assumptions we are bringing forward to you to discuss today. To begin with, you are looking at a study area that includes Central East and Southeast. This is the same study area that we used during the CETO application. For the purpose of the reaffirmation study, we're planning to look at year 2024 as well as year 2030. Given that the earliest in-service date for CETO right now is anticipated to be in the 2024 timeframe. As part of the commitment, we will also look at year 2020. However, we'll do that when the 2024 study using sufficiently certain project confirms that CETO needs to be triggered. Overall, we're planning to use the low forecast provided by the 2021 long-term outlook reference case. In this case, it utilizes the hourly low forecast in order to help us capture some of the localized hourly energy consumption patterns. So similar to CETO NED itself, we will also account for the effects of weather, including the relationship between temperature and load, and the relationship between wind speed and generation dispatch. We're creating five different weather synchronized load profiles for the purpose of the study. Similar to the CETO NED, we'll also look at including the PEMV project. However, at the same time, we will also look at the sensitivity of the situation where PEMV is not constructed yet.
Peter?
Yes,
I
please.
I have a question that I'll just, Santi, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce the last name, but if you would please go ahead and ask a question.
Mm-hmm. Sure, please.
Hello, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Santi.
How's it going? I just have a few questions on this slide. The first one is just on the topic that you had mentioned about PEMV being included. So just to be clear, you said that years 2024 and 2030 will be studied. And does that mean then for specifically year 2024, when performing this study, that you will be assuming that PEMV will be in service? And if so, under the approved configuration or under what configuration for PEMV?
Yeah. Thank you, Santi, for your question. Yes, for the 2024, we're planning to do the two runs. One is with PEMV, one is without PEMV. As we do anticipate, PEMV does have an influence on the congestion results. The configuration that we're planning to use is the stage one portion of the PEMV, which include one line and a portion of the second line. So that's the configuration we're planning to use in our study.
And then another question on this slide. In the table, there is a star that says TCM works required. Can you just explain that a little bit or expand on that if you maybe were planning on getting to that? But that was another question that I had on this slide.
Yes, thank you. You're absolutely correct. So TCM is transmission capital maintenance. So meaning that this line has certain rating. However, as the TFO are responsible for maintaining the line, there's an understanding there are certain components currently that will require the line to be derated a little bit lower than the 489. That's the anticipated rating. We are working closely with the TFO to make sure that they can execute their capital maintenance work so that the line can be restored properly to the 489 MVA rating. That's for the case of 9L20.
Great. And then just the last question on this slide. Looks like you'll be using five correlated hourly load and renewable profiles. I don't know if that's something that you'll be posting along with your study assumptions, but that would be something that'd be great to see along with the rest of the assumptions if you can post that.
Okay, I understand the ask here. Let's think about that. Overall, the hourly load assumption is a large amount of data. And currently, if I'm not mistaken, our plan is to share the overall assumptions here without going into the details. I'll probably have to take this back and to have a discussion. But for now, my assumption is that we will provide the study assumptions that are included in this presentation only.
Sure. Yeah. Take it away. And then if there's anything else, we can discuss later. Otherwise, that's it for this slide. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Santi.
Peter.
We
also have a question from Aaron Crush with PGSC. He's asking, what was the trigger to determine that a reaffirmation study is required if the previous milestone triggers were already met? What has changed?
Oh, okay. Thank you, Aaron. So the trigger to start the reaffirmation study is the upper limit of the milestone monitoring range that were presented in the CETO.NET application. If I recall correctly, there's a milestone range. The upper limit is roughly around the 1550 megawatt of project meeting inclusion criteria. And as of the fall last year, we've met that upper limit. As a result, we consider that as the triggering point for the reaffirmation study. And it's taking us a little bit of time to get things started as we work on determining the initial set of study assumption to share with you. And this is why we're here today.
Thanks, Peter. We've also got a question from Dan Levson. Dan, please go ahead.
Yes. On that first bullet, you say study area includes Central East and Southeast. Now, when you say includes, can you elaborate on that a little bit? Does it include, for example, the Southwest? And does it include any projects, small or large, that might interact with the flows in the Central East and Southeast?
Yeah. Thank you, Dan. So as you are aware, when the ISOs initiate a project, we start by defining the study area. So for the purpose of the reaffirmation study, similarly, we use the same study area of Central East and Southeast that was defined in the original NET application. Later on in the slide, I will highlight that for sure, we also include other projects in other areas, including the Southwest and the rest of the province, where it has met our inclusion criteria as well. But the focus of the study certainly is within the study area, which is Central East and Southeast.
Well, okay, are you going to explain the inclusion criteria later then?
Dan, that's a wonderful question. At the moment, I think that the inclusion criteria that the ISO applied has been very consistent. To my understanding, projects are part of, will be considered meeting our inclusion criteria once they have executed their SaaS agreement and have provided guac payment. That's my understanding of inclusion criteria. But if there's any mistake there, please feel free to correct.
Yeah, actually, what I was trying to get a little more clarification on was not generation coming on the system, but rather the transmission, other transmission projects, which may remove some of the constraints in the Southeast because of that are coming from, say, the Southwest as an example. So those are projects perhaps that are not even on the books, but they might be $10 or $20 million, and they might go a long ways to addressing constraints in the Southeast and Central East.
Yeah, thank you, Dan, for the clarification. So in terms of other transmission project or system transmission project, the only one that we're including as part of the assessment is the PEMV, as you see on screen here. Anything else that are in project status, especially those that are not approved yet, they are not included as part of this particular study.
Okay, thanks.
So, Peter, Aaron Crush had also submitted an additional question saying it would be helpful to understand which specific projects are included in the analysis. Can the ISO please list which projects are included?
Okay. Thank you, Aaron. So these are the projects that have met our certainty criteria. We can certainly provide that information. I don't have it handy with me today. However, if you can reach out after the session, I'm happy to provide that list. That's my understanding, yes.
Thanks, Peter. There are no additional questions at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Diane. Perhaps we can move on to the next slide. Now, going into the thermal generation assumptions. Certainly, there are two larger facilities within the study area. That's the Battle River and Sheerness units. Both facilities certainly have an impact on the potential congestion in the transmission system within the study area. The units within those two facilities, they've all transitioned to gas operation. And currently, the anticipated retirement year of these gas converted units is roughly in the 2030 timeframe. As a result, the ISO is proposing to use the primary scenario, the scenario one as a primary scenario that's indicated on the screen here, where the four units are available in service and operating generally in a peaking fashion. As a part of the sensitivity, we're also proposing to look at the four units retiring in 2024 or in the 2030 study, meaning that they are removed from service and they are not dispatched. On the screen here, you can see a clear comparison table of the thermal generation assumption we're planning to use for the reaffirmation study when compared to the original CETO NID. And I will now pass the time to Chad, who will get into further details on some of the assumptions related to the thermal generation units of Battle River and Sheerness, as well as other assumptions. Chad?
Hey, good morning, everyone, and thank you, Peter. I'll now run through the Battle River and Sheerness assumptions. At a high level, the assumptions have been developed using the most recent information. Heat rates for the units remain based on AEC filings, and the VOM and FOM assumptions remain within a reasonable range of expected values. The largest change has been in the offer strategy assumptions. These have been updated based on 2020 and 2021 energy market merit orders, and we've calibrated them based on 2020 and 2021 actual historic unit output. The overall impact of these updates is that the simulation outputs are now more aligned with recent observed unit operations. In 2021, the Battle River and Sheerness units operated with an annual capacity factor between 18 and 52%. We feel this is aligned with our initial modeling results, which had 2023 simulated annual capacity factors between 6% and 34% for the units. So these units have been modeled as peaking units, and they are aligned with recent behavior. And maybe we can move to the next slide if there's no questions on this one. Speaking to the natural gas price assumptions, we've aligned these with the 2021 LTO, with the gas price ranges from $2.30 a GJ to $2.96 a GJ between 2023 and 2030. Our carbon price assumptions are aligned with federal carbon price schedules, with $50 per ton in 2022, increasing to $170 per ton by 2030. We're also assuming the tier benchmark of 0.37 tons megawatt hour for the thermal units.
Chat, Aaron Kresh has submitted a question asking, how did the ISO come up with the $0 capacity value?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So the 20% value that we have there, that's based on our understanding of how a coal to gas unit could operate. It's partly been validated through the operation of Battle River 4, which consistently goes down to about 20%. And we've seen Battle River 5 running at around 24%. We have noticed that the Sheerness 1 and 2 units late in 2021 were running at around 30%, $0 hours. But at this time, our assumptions are consistent with that 20%.
Thanks, Chad. Santi from Capital Power is waiting to ask a question. So, Santi, I'll just unmute you there.
Thank you. Just a question about the natural gas price assumption. Number one, does the ISO as part of this gas price include the fuel delivery cost?
This would, so by fuel delivery cost, are you talking about contracts to deliver the natural gas, I suppose? And I believe that's usually included more in the FOM charge, not this natural gas price assumption.
So okay, so you put it in FOM.
Yeah.
And then number two, you said you'd mentioned that this comes from the ASO's LTO. Is it from the 2021 LTO? And I guess the reason why I'm asking is because I'm just looking at forwards for gas for the time period. And, you know, the lowest I see gas prices is at like the low threes. And right here you have it the highest at just below three.
Yeah, so this is based on the 2021 LTO. Forward prices, gas prices have been going up, and I agree with you. I think 2024 gas prices are a little above $3, and if you go out to 2027, they're about $3. So this is an area where we could look at adjusting the gas prices based on the forward costs. But our current assumption is aligned with the LTO.
Or just something to consider in terms of, you know, when you're going through the study, as we get further and further away from, you know, the initial release of the LTO, and we have forward market guidance on gas prices for 2024 and 2030, the study years for the reaffirmation, maybe consider using forwards. It'd also be helpful to see maybe taking out of FOM and having the gas price include the delivery cost, but that's, you know, as long as it's included somewhere, that's good to know.
Right. Thank you, Santi. Yeah, we will consider sensitivity to forward gas prices. Point taken. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, there are no further questions at this time.
So I'll pass this back to Peter, who will talk about generation outside of the study area.
Thank you, Chad, for covering the thermal generation. So for the generation outside of the study area of Central East and Southeast, the congestion assessment is to include the existing generation as well as generation projects that have met our certainty criteria. And specifically for the Southwest, that means we are including an install generation renewables generation capacity totaling 1,900 megawatt, as well as project meeting our certainty criteria totaling 400 megawatt. Next slide, please. There's one. Can you go back one, please? Thank you. So the next couple of slides are on the renewables assumptions. So as we are going into 2022, we're planning to use generation information that's available to us as of the end of January 2022. Based on that statistics, what we're seeing is a total installed renewables capacity in the study area totaling 1,100 megawatt. These are just the renewables. And then for the upcoming generation project that have met our inclusion criteria, they total roughly 1,400 megawatt. In addition to the primary scenario of including project that have met our inclusion criteria, we also included two additional future scenarios to potentially examine the congestion trend to inform us of an updated milestone monitor range if that is required. For that, we have added a total of 2,400 megawatt of additional generation in our connection list. So this group of 2400 megawatt generation is based on the technology and location split that's found in our connection list. Can we go to the next slide, please? Okay, so these are the three scenarios that we are planning to use. The three scenarios are shown at the table there at the bottom. So we have the first one and the primary one, which we'll be using that to determine if CETO is to be triggered or not. And that's using a project that's met our sufficiently certain criteria or the inclusion criteria.
Peter?
Sorry about that, folks. Looks like we've lost
Peter. Perhaps I'll finish the...
Peter, sorry, we lost you.
Can you hear me? Oh, okay.
Now we can... Yeah, you can start from the beginning on this slide, please.
Sure. Okay, so we are planning to run with three scenarios. One of the scenario is using project that have met our certainty inclusion criteria. And that's the one we will be using to determine if CETO project should be triggered or not. In addition to that, we also include two additional scenario with generation totaling rough 2400 megawatts. So under incremental one, these are the projects that have not met our inclusion criteria. However, the project proponents has indicated the commitment to advance that particular project by securing required financing or a third-party offtake agreement, such as the power purchase agreement. And so for incremental two, these are the projects where the proponents have indicated that it is in the final stages of
Sorry. Jen, can you explain the second while we wait for Peter?
Actually, Dan has a question right now. That might be a good time to take that. Dan, please go ahead.
Yeah. I was just wondering about, when you look at a large number of projects like that, in the incremental one and incremental two, they would presumably, if they were included, would have an effect on the pool price, which would have an effect on all of the projects going forward. I'm just curious, how does that sort of feedback loop, which would happen in a normal economy, how does that work? And then I have another question, but maybe start with that one.
Yep. So, Dan, I'll start, and then Chad, if you can jump in. You're talking about the bigger picture here. At this time, we're focused on the impact of these scenarios on congestion. So that is our focus right now. But you're absolutely right that the more renewables we have, there will be a downward pressure on pool price. That we will observe. And there are other challenges as well that we're looking at in terms of flexibility requirements and all that. But right now, for this exercise, we are focused on observing the impact of these projects on congestion.
Next question that came in through writing was from Naval To from FEMA. Please briefly explain sufficiently certain criteria. And does it include fully secured financing?
Yeah. Hi, Naval. Hopefully I'm back. Do I sound okay?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Yes, so the sufficiently certain criteria is the one that we use to determine if a project has met our inclusion or to be included as part of our consideration. So as mentioned earlier, these are the projects that have executed the SAS agreement, as well as have provided evidence of guac payment. So that's what we meant by sufficiently certain project or inclusion criteria projects. So that's the first line that you see, the first scenario. And for the additional scenario that we have, those are addition incremental projects on top of the previous scenario. So when we talk about scenario for incremental one, it includes project as part of the incremental one line, as well as those projects that have met certainty criteria.
Thanks, Peter. Let's just go back to Dan. I think I might have been off earlier.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. My second question was around the inclusion criteria. If I recall, about a year ago when this CETA was active, the ISO had explained that no generator that had met the inclusion criteria had ever not proceeded. In the last year, I don't know the answer to this, but I'm just curious, has anybody that met the inclusion criteria is no longer in the queue or no longer qualified to proceed?
That is a great question, Dan. I don't think I have the answer for that.
Yeah, I don't have.
Yeah.
Dan, we'll take it away and we'll provide a response to everybody on your question.
Yeah, sure. Appreciate it. Thank you.
And let's just go to Sandy.
Thanks again for taking my question. Capital Power certainly agrees and supports the sensitivity inclusion of you know, these incremental megawatts that could certainly be brought onto the system. I guess I just have a few questions about first the inclusion criteria and those that are sufficiently certain. I think earlier in the slide deck, you'd noted one that the most recent information on connections and projects would be included. And I think something like January 2022 project data would be used. Is that right?
That's correct, Santi. Yes.
Okay. By the time this is completed, we will have been, I don't know, a few months out from the most quote unquote recent data. And then by the time 2024 rolls around, presumably there'll be a greater number of projects rolling into, I think it's stage 5 of the connection process, which is kind of the defining line for, you know, meeting the inclusion criteria. So I guess in terms of, you know, how you separate sufficiently certain megawatts relative to incremental one and incremental two, does the ISO plan on, I don't know, maybe using an expected value for projects that are, let's say, in stage 4 or 3 and 4 that would likely meet sufficiently certain criteria by that time with an ISD for 2024? Or are you just strictly looking at including those that are in stage 5 or beyond as of Jan 2022.
Yeah, thank you, Santi, for your question. I think I'm going to give it a shot here. So I think to your point, I would say that incremental one and incremental two is exactly that attempt for the ISO to anticipate what could be coming online shortly after those project that have met our inclusion criteria. So on this one, that's why we chose to include these things based on the financing firmness of the project that's available to us. And with this, we certainly understand that the connection list changes very quickly. And the option that's available to us is to use the information that's available to us right now. And in order to hedge or make sure that we are prepared for the future, that's why we're proposing these incremental one, incremental two, so that we can provide an indication that we can anticipate and get ready for the potential need to trigger CETO. But at the same time, we understand that these are still proposed projects, and we want to make sure that we align the timeline of the transmission development with the generation as closely as possible.
Sure. And just to follow up to your response and my first question, In terms of incremental one and incremental two, is there an equivalent that the ISO sees as part of the connection process? Like, are those projects at anywhere in this connection process stages, or is it predominantly like stage three and four, or I don't know how you would, if there even is an equivalent to incremental one and two to the connection process, but certainly be helpful to elaborate if you have any details there. Yeah,
for sure. So we definitely work very closely with our connection group on determining that list, precisely which stage it corresponds to. Unfortunately, I don't have an answer, but we do work with them, and it's the connection group that really help us determine some of these information and provide us with the list. So there's an equivalency to the connection stages, but I cannot tell you precisely which stage, whether it's two or three or four, is equivalent to.
Sure. And just my last point on this, I think I heard either you, Ada, or Peter, you commit to providing the list of projects that will be included in each of these categories. Is that right? And if so, if not, that would certainly be helpful to be included as part of the final assumptions that you guys provide and post publicly.
Okay. Sandy, thank you for that. Just to clarify, I think the commitments provide the list of projects that have met our inclusion criteria. However, for incremental one and incremental two, I'm certainly going to take it back and confirm with our connection group. But my understanding is that these are project specific information. And at this stage, I'm going to go with the assumption that we're not planning to share the list of projects in incremental one and incremental two.
Okay, you know, that's great. I certainly can understand that. So as long as at very least the projects that have met the inclusion criteria are provided, and the rest I can certainly understand why they'd be aggregated.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We've got a question from Laura Dalek, and it is guap evidence tied to either of the investments, or I think that's investments, I'm not sure.
Thank you, Laura.
Increments.
Okay. The guac evidence is certainly more related to the sufficiently certain project. So I would say that that's more related to the first scenario than the two increments. However, I want to also come back and clarify that we, on the planning, on the system planning end, we do work closely with our connection planning folks, and we do rely on them to provide these relevant information.
Thanks, Peter. There are no additional questions at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Diane.
Oh, sorry.
Dan. Yes.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah. Sorry, I guess I've been the question guy for 30 or 40 years now, so it's my curiosity. I can't constrain it.
You're always welcome, Dan. You're always welcome.
On the... earlier on, I think you mentioned, and I'm looking at that scenario A and scenario B and the 0.5% congestion. Earlier on, you mentioned, if I heard you right, there would be five hourly profiles that you would be looking at. Have I got that part right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just play out a scenario. Say three or four of the hourly profiles ended up with, you know, not a problem, but one of them ended up with, there is going to be some more than 0.5% congestion. How does that work? Do you go with the majority? If you fail under any one of the profiles, how do you plan to resolve that?
Yeah. Thank you, Dan. That's a great question. So for the hourly low profile, they are meant to capture the difference, especially when we consider the relationship between load and renewables dispatch. So with that understanding, they are reflective of potential possibility, and we take them into consideration in the sense that we combine those different potential possibilities into an aggregated risk profile. And the overall risk profile gets included as part of the congestion assessment. So overall, we do have the ability to break it down into those individual load profile, but when we come to the final result, we do provide one final outcome, taking those risks into consideration. That's how the assessment is done generally.
Okay, thank you.
And we've got another question from Ed. And Ed, if you could please go ahead.
Yeah, just wanted to, Ed DePelger here from DePel Consulting, just wanted to follow up on Dan's question. So as I understand it, you make some assumptions, let's say in the sufficiently certain scenario, and you're going to end up with a dispatch level in 8760. And then from that dispatch level, you'll determine if there's what kind of congestion you see with that dispatch. And so you end up, it's kind of a deterministic study, so that you end up making all the natural gas assumptions, you know, which generations are going to be on, and then you come up with an assessment on the level of congestion. And can you just confirm that that's the case and that's how you're doing the study? And then I might have a follow-up.
Sure, Ed. I'm going to jump in here again, but please, if anybody wants to jump in, please feel free to add. I would certainly categorize the hourly simulation as a more probabilistic assessment instead of deterministic. Deterministic, generally speaking, we refer to that as a situation where as part of the planning study exercise, we determine what's a reasonably conservative dispatch condition, and we assess the ability of the transmission system to meet reliability criteria under those predetermined dispatches. So when it comes to the hourly simulation, it's probabilistic in the sense that there are a number of variables in there that they can take on, and they take on an aggregated risk or aggregated form to output a general hourly flow or dispatch result. But at the same time, those results does take the variability of individual variables into consideration. So I would still categorize that as probabilistic analysis.
So just so I'm clear, so in the Aurora model, when you're, it could run Monte Carlo simulations based upon, as I understand it, gas price changing or unit outages changing, mm-hmm. and so forth, and then you'll get a distribution of the actual dispatch levels for each unit, and then you know from that you might be able to take, let's say, the 50th percentile case. And then say that's going to be our, you know, how we'll determine if that congestion reaches 0.5% annually. So it doesn't sound like that's what you're doing, though. It sounds like you choose a gas price, you know, you're choosing which projects to put in, and then you're running the 8760 model and you're coming up with a number for the congestion. So is that correct? Like, is that what you're doing and how it differs from a true probabilistic study, which would, you know, maybe have 100 cases and you would choose kind of the midpoint of the cases to determine congestion. And while I bring that up, it's just if you're only choosing one scenario, you know, when obviously, you know, the gas price is going to change throughout the year, or the several years you're looking at this, that's going to change the dispatch level of the units. That's going to change, let's say, the level of congestion that you're going to see. And it doesn't sound like that's what you're doing. You're more determining a dispatch level and coming up with one number, which you can say, yes, it'll be 0.5% congestion annually or not. So that's how I'm, what I'm concerned about overall is that you'll end up, you know, with a number for congestion, but really there's a wide distribution to that congestion and you don't really understand that distribution level of the congestion results.
Yeah, thank you, Ed. I think we're getting into a level of detail that's typically more appropriately covered as part of the ISO methodology discussion. I think these are the items that I would consider we discuss that during the CETO NIT application. And we are certainly doing the same approach and methodology that we use in the CETA application. So if you prefer, we can certainly take additional discussion offline. However, at this time, I'm going to say that, that's more related to methodology that was already presented and agreed upon and approved by the AUC. And we are, I can certainly confirm that we're using the same methodology. So I think.
I'll add to that. Ed, I mean, if you're concerned about the gas prices, I'm not sure if you were present when we discussed this, an additional sensitivity on the gas prices. From going from $3 per gigajoule to 3.5. And if you have, if you'd like us to consider a higher number, you can certainly provide it in the feedback and we'll consider that as well. If you want to increase the sensitivity range.
No, fair enough, Ed. Maybe we can take this offline and just, you know, have just a conversation on the methodology that would be helpful to me to make sure I understand.
Yeah, that's fine. But as Peter mentioned, I mean, this is the same methodology that we used in the CETO NEED application. So,
yeah, fair enough. Thank you.
So, Naval To from BEMA had the next question. How does your study adjust your generation dispatch on the thermals when renewables come on? Would that be available in study results?
Hi, Naval. Thank you for your question. So, certainly, the Aurora simulation tool. It does take the entire generation dispatch portfolio into consideration. So depending on the bidding prices and bidding offer that's included as part of the simulation, the lower cost facilities or generation will certainly be included first. And if you include additional renewables, certainly it will have an impact on the generation dispatch of other units, including the thermals. And overall, in terms of the study results, our objective is to provide a summarized study result. It's not our objective to provide the entire data structure that's included in the Aurora simulation. That data will be certainly in the hundreds of megabytes or even gigabytes for sure. That will be a large volume of data. So our intention is to provide a summarized result to share with the stakeholders as well as the AUC.
So the next question in line was from Doug Shaggett with Swan Hills Synfuels. Jin, are you answering that question online? It looks like you might be typing, or would you like to answer it live? I'll just go ahead and read it. For clarity, does the sufficiently certain megawatts on slide 15, 358 megawatts, correlate to the slide 7 comment that CETO milestone upper limit met October 2021? And Doug's follow-up to that was, if so, regarding that question, why is a reaffirmation study needed?
Jin, would you like to answer that question or should I?
Peter, I suggest you go ahead.
Okay. Okay, sure. So on the sufficiently certain project on slide 13, I just want to make sure I...
Slide 15.
That's right. Yeah. Slide 15. So the sufficient certain project. So the sufficient certain project on slide 15, they certainly include those that have met our criteria. And those are the ones that's also part of the list that actually triggered a project as part of initial 1550. So I just want to clarify that there may be a little difference in numbers in the sense that when we talk about the 1550 in the original CETO NIT application, we're using a baseline generation that's available as of, I believe, January of 2020. In that situation, that's the number. When it comes to the latest statistic that we are looking at based on the January 2022, some of these facilities that were part of the inclusion criteria, they have moved into the baseline load, meaning that they have become in service. They have the facility that's constructed and are in service. So they change the category in that sense. But overall, the total generation is definitely the same or more So that's why we are considering the milestone upper limit has been reached, and we are triggering the reaffirmation study. I think that should cover both of Doug's question. Thank you.
And we'll go back to Dan Lepson. He has another question. Dan, go ahead.
Going back to the whole question of the Sheerness and Battle River status, I guess, going forward, it looks like you're assuming that they're operating for the 2024 timeframe. In coming to that conclusion, I'm just curious how you arrived at that. Did you talk to the owners? Did you do any economic modeling? And I have one follow-up on that as well, but start with that one.
I did. It's Peter Jen? Here. Yeah.
Go ahead, Peter.
No, actually, I missed the first half because of my poor internet connection today. If Chad heard the full question, please go ahead.
Yeah, I heard the question. For the Battle River and Sheerness assumptions, we have seen within AUC filings that they expect to operate the units on gas, and they will be able to operate the units to the 2030s. We do have a scenario in here on the units retiring. So we think that given what we've seen in AAC documents and given the scenarios, we've covered off the range of outcomes.
Okay. That answers my question. The other one was around, I think if I recall, on the CETO NEED application, there were instances where in the dispatch, there was a lot of wind and a lot of gas operating at the same time. And that kind of struck us as not a likely scenario. I'm wondering, have you looked into that in the meantime? Does that still show up, or are you expecting that to show up in your dispatch, or has that been resolved?
I'll say that the offer strategies have been updated, and they should take into consideration renewable outputs. So I don't see any concerns.
Sorry, I missed the last part. You don't see anything?
I guess I wouldn't. I don't quite understand your concern, or I don't see any concerns with the offer strategy and how units are dispatched around renewables.
Well, if the former coal units, gas units, are all operating at full capacity, and you have a lot of wind at the same time, then you're creating likely congestion. Now, if that's the real world, so be it. But if that's unlikely to happen because of the economics, especially with like high gas prices and so on, then it seems to me that shouldn't happen. But I'm not a dispatch. I'm not an expert in this field. I'm just making an observation.
Yeah, Dan, I think that's definitely a fair question. So one of the things that we have observed in other studies, especially working with our forecasting and analytic group, is the fact that these units seems to be transitioning over more as the peaking dispatch type scenario instead of the baseload scenario. And certainly one of the drivers for the peaking scenario operation is the fact that based on the economics, that's part of the large assumption set within the hourly simulation tool. These thermal units are potentially throttled back because of the economics compared to the rest of the units on the system. So I would say that's included as part of the assumption that we're seeing as part of our overall work, but certainly we're going to make that assessment or make that observation once we carry out the reaffirmation study.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Yep. Okay, we are 1 minute away from 10 o'clock. Any final questions from folks? Dan?
Yeah, sorry, me again. I would I'd like to commend the ISO on two things. One is obviously having the stakeholder session, and secondly, the congestion management work that the ISO seems to be doing is it seems to be producing some interesting, more hopefully more cost-effective outcomes across the system. So that's great. The one those are the bouquets. The one brick, I guess, is we got this presentation, I believe, yesterday. Some of us are very busy working. I think I was until 11 o'clock last night. You want us to provide comments, written comments, by Friday. That's like 2 days. I don't know if anybody else has similar constraints to some of my myself and my work associates, but it seems like a little short fuse. Is there any possibility of getting a bit of an extension on that time frame?
Sure, and then we will consider extending the deadline to next week. We'll announce a date shortly.
That's much appreciated. Thank you.
I would just like to confirm we did actually make the presentation available more than a week ago. Sorry for the short timing on that. We'll try to profile that a little bit more robustly in our stakeholder newsletters.
But still, we'll consider extending the deadline. So that you're not under pressure. And then we always appreciate comments from stakeholders and your participation and your comments and your questions. So they're all greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
So perhaps we can quickly go to the next step slide so we can just conclude the presentation today. Yeah, so thank you very much for your questions and feedback here. As we mentioned, we are definitely seeking your feedback. We have taken away quite a few that you've highlighted today, and we are open to receive your written feedback with extended deadline into next week. So it's not this Friday anymore. But in terms of the approach, please do send your final feedback and comments to the email address on your screen right now, and we will be able to take it back for our consideration. With that extension, of course, the timeline for the next couple bullets potentially will be extended slightly as well, but our objective is to post those assumptions as quickly as reasonable in early March. And with those final assumptions determined, we will be starting our reaffirmation studies, and we're looking to get it done quickly, either by the end of Q1 or early in April. That's our objective. And once we have the study results, our intention is to provide the summarized study results to the AUC, as well as making it available on our website so that all stakeholders can have access to the summarized study results. Thank you very much for your attention and your participation today. We're certainly open for additional questions and feedback and comment at this time.
I'd like to mention the audio file. Sorry, Peter, I don't know if you mentioned that. It will be posted within 24 hours. You can find that with all the other information related to the session under GRID and projects, and then the Central East Transfer Out project overview. And I am just also going to launch a quick little poll if you don't mind taking a minute to respond. Thank you. I don't see any additional questions coming in via the chat or via telephone. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We appreciate your time.